Come to this time of meditation. Meditation and prayer are very closely related. And as Nancy mentioned here, like many other spiritual communities, we believe in prayer. But one of the things that we spotlight about prayer here in the Unity tradition is not so much making it about who or what you pray to or what you pray for, but where you pray from. That's what unites us. So I'd invite you to just take a moment, if it's comfortable, and close, allow your eyes to close, or just gaze in a soft downward focus, and just take a few moments to settle in and connect to your breath. Maybe allowing the breath to slow, and just noticing the sensation of breathing in and breathing out. Maybe noticing the sensation of being seated in your chair with your feet on the floor, supported and held to this earth by gravity. And just taking your seat in this present moment, in this place. And then taking a moment to consider the words of the song that we just sang, going inside to find God. There's really nothing to do or nothing to really search for, except to just watch and listen. It's been said in the Gospel of Thomas that what we long for longs for us. What we desire desires us. So maybe noticing where those longings and where those desires live and what they're about. And then maybe noticing, can those longings and those desires be witnessed with curiosity, kindness, and non-judgment. Maybe allowing yourself to notice peace. Maybe asking, is peace possible in this moment? It's been said that peace is this present moment without judgment. And then gently allowing your awareness to come back to your breath, back to your body. Noticing if there's been any shifts or changes or not. Inviting those tense parts of the body maybe to relax. And then as you're ready, just gently, lovingly opening your eyes.
This world as it is, go inside to find my God. I will leave this world as it is, go inside to find my God. Go inside to find my God. I'll go inside to find my God.
Thank you, Julie. And I know that you were all here late last night, many of you, for everything. So extra special thanks. And yeah, so good to be home in Coeur d'Alene today, and so thank you so much. It's been a week, yeah. After last Sunday, Lisa and I flew out to Seattle on Monday for my dad's funeral, flew back late Monday night after the funeral, spent a few days up north. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in the message, and got back yesterday, and am here today. Leaving for Seattle this afternoon. I've got a training to do tomorrow and Tuesday. Be back Tuesday afternoon, ready to start here October 1st. So I'll have some books in hand and all of that. So it's just kind of one of those things. I was talking with Sina. There you are. Yes, you just kind of have to sometimes ride the waves of life, you know. You just raise your sail and let it take you where it will. But I'm really excited about today, really excited to be here with you and to share the message that today. Today is all about finding love in religion. And before we get into that, I just want to kind of set the context here. And this is all about this little message series that I've been doing has been all about our mission, which is living love and uplifting lives, finding love in various portals or various places, various seasons of life. So a few weeks ago, we started off with talking about finding love in loss. And the main idea there was to look at loss and to frame loss in the context of clearing, making way for something new. And then the week after that, we talked about finding love in community. And the idea there was to remember that our aspiration is to find and believe in the goodness and the spark and the presence of God in everyone and everything. That's what we mean by Christ consciousness. Other spiritual traditions use terms like prana, chi, the bodhicitta, the true self in Jungian psychology. You know, whatever it is, you know, here we look for the harmony in all of that. And that's how we find love in community. Last week we talked about finding love in yourself. And finding love in yourself is not always an easy thing to do. We talked about the great commandment where Jesus invites us to love our neighbor as ourself. And there's an assumptive phrase in that we love ourselves, you know, even in the experience of not loving ourselves, even in the experience of suicidality. It's not so much about wanting to die as much as it is about wanting to stop living and stopping the pain of that. And so this idea, and there's also this idea that loving others and loving ourselves, it's not a linear progression thing. You know, first I've got to love myself, and when I figure that out, then I can open my heart and start to love others. No, there's a flow and there's a dynamism in the love that we have for ourselves and the love that we experience for others and the love that we have for ourselves and the love that we experience with others. And it's fraught with surprise. You know, Jesus told the story of the parable of the Good Samaritan. And there's much more to that story than just doing good and helping others, but watching for the surprises and the type of people that help you in your lives. You know, it's finding love in those unexpected places, those corners of life, maybe where the light doesn't shine. So today we're talking about finding love in religion. And I'm guessing for many of you, well, I'm assuming you're here, so you have at least a mild interest in religion. but I think we can agree that we know many people that religion is a four-letter word. And it's like, I want nothing to do with it. If you remember back, I think it was in June, I offered a message on the power of polarities where we talked about the difference between spirituality and religion. Many people describe themselves, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. Some spiritual communities describe themselves as spiritual, but not religious. And remember, we did that little exercise to, you know, what words and feelings come to mind with spiritual, right? And then what words and feelings come to mind with the word religion and the contrast between the two of those. And the invitation in that message, and today's message is kind of a springboard off of that one, is what if it were possible to be spiritual and religious? Spirituality can be thought of very simply as the experience of connection. Connection to yourself, connection to others, connection to the world, and connection to whatever sense of the transcendent or the divine you may have. Religion, in its etymological etymological meaning, is from the prefix re, which means again, and ligion, ligio, ligament, connect or bind. So religion is just simply the practice of again connecting, again binding to what? Love. And so in that sense, religion could be, it can show up in many, many, many ways. I had a religious and spiritual experience this week. Do any of you know where that place is?
Priest.
Margaret, she's just right on it. Yeah. That's Reeder Bay at Priest Lake. And after we got back from our funeral, my dad's funeral, Lisa and I drove up and spent a few days at Priest Lake, and one morning I went down to watch the sunrise, and this is a picture of that, and it was a beautiful, beautiful experience. I remember, you know, just waking up and going through my little religious practice that I do in the morning, which includes making French press coffee, boiling water, pouring the coffee into the French press, the hot water, smelling it, you know, taking my spoon and stamping the grounds down to make that frothy crema. Yes, I'm from Seattle, kind of a coffee snob, okay? But you get that crema just right, and you let it steep just 4 minutes. And then I went through my little religious thing of getting my headphones and my phone and bundling up because it was like 48 degrees outside, you know, just super, super cold. Took my coffee down to the lake, walked, did my little meditation and all of that, and then just watched and listened. And in that process of watching and listening, there was a very spiritual experience of watching the sun slowly come up, watching the fog just kind of slowly waft across the lake because the air was colder than the water was. And it was just a marvelous thing. I had two experiences and reflections from that I just was thankful, one of which caused the altering of the message today, so which I thank Julie for. We had to do a little bit of right turn here. People ask me where I get inspiration for messages, and it just comes from all over the place. But I was reminded of the difference between Chronos, human time, and Kairos, sacred time, as the sun came up at what I thought was glacial speed. I'm sitting there, would you come up, please, and warm me? You know, and it felt like forever. And I just thought to myself, wow. You know, Chronos time, seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, months, you know, that we live is a very different time than natural time, sacred time. And so just appreciating the difference for that. And the insight that I got is that in sacred time, all you can do is allow it to come. There's nothing that can be done to manipulate it, fabricate. When we live in human time, oh boy, we can just, you know, push and push and push and get things done faster and quicker and whatever. You know, our phones have allowed us to have this, you know, thing at our fingertips where we can just get what we want yesterday. But life reminds us that, no, the things that matter most cannot be forced or manipulated. You just have to open and allow it. And kind of the second thing around that was this idea that this lake was formed by glaciers thousands of years ago. Now, again, think about that. We're talking lifetimes, generations of slow-moving glaciers to carve out this beautiful lake. What would it have been like to be there if a glacier was there? You know, would we have any idea there? But I was just thinking about that in terms of the difference between climate and the weather. We all know the weather can change on a dime, right? You know, but climate, to think that there was a period in Earth's history where it was covered primarily by ice, you know, and now we're living in a day and an age where the world is warming up, it's getting hotter, you know, and so, I mean, that climactic change is happening at such a macro level. And there's something about that there's a peace and a trust. This beautiful earth of ours, Pachamama, is such a gift. And I was thinking about just her resilience in all that she's lived through, and the resilience in what she's living now as human beings interact with the planet, and how we're learning to come back again to not just steward the planet as if we're the most important things on it, but to live in relationship and live in conversation with the planet. And so, speaking of that, I just want to pause here and put in a sacred plug for my partner in love, Lisa. She's sitting out there. Can you raise your hand, honey, so people can see you? In just a few weeks, she's going to be putting on a retreat out at Luther Haven Lodge called Through the Portal of Rest, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And I just want to extend a warm invitation for any and all of you to come. There's still a few spaces left. There's some flyers in the refreshment room and I think all over the place where you can get some more information. Or you can nab Lisa if she's still around after the service today and she can tell you all about it. But my friends, it's important that we take time to step away out of this rat race called life and come back again to how things really, really are. So today, how can you find love in religion? What I want to do in our time that remains is, first of all, tell you how religions become irreligious and irrelevant. And then, secondly, offer you three principles that can help you navigate finding love in religion. Okay? So the first thing is, then how does religion become irreligious and irrelevant? Well, let's back up and say, how do religious movements start? It usually starts with some kind of a mystical experience. Now, I'm curious, what's a mystical experience to you? When you hear of someone were to ask you and say, what's a mystical experience? How would you define it? Any ideas? Being at the lake with mist flowing over it. Definitely a mystical experience. Nature's synchronicity. Uh-huh. Yeah. What else?
A direct experience of the divine somehow.
Uh-huh. Waking up. Yes. Yes. What else? The birth of a child. A mystical experience. Mysterious. And say more about mysterious.
I don't get it, but I trust it.
I don't get it, but I trust it. Yeah. Would someone else have their... Yeah.
Seeing something beyond your present experience that shows you there's something so much more to life, love, to God, and what your current thought system.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. An experience that expands your awareness and your consciousness of that maybe, just maybe, there's more to life than just here and now. Yeah, but I hope you begin to see that mystical experiences are vast, and if there's one common thread, and I would add a rock concert, a walk through the park, reading a book, looking at a sculpture, a sporting event, video games, I'll talk about that a little bit better, also our mystical experiences. And what's the through line through all of them? Todd in the back touched on it. You can't describe it with words. You can try, but words are inadequate. Now, if we tie this back to religion as we commonly think about it in terms of like places people go on Sunday morning, religions also have their birthplace as a mystical experience, okay? And when that happens, three things happen. First of all, a doctrine is informed, okay? And a doctrine is basically how we have this mystical experience and we see how life operates in new ways. We begin to see how we relate to ourselves, to each other, to the world, to the divine, or whatever. And there's a doctrine that can emerge from that. And from that doctrine can emerge ethics. Ethics are rules and principles that support that doctrine, how we get along with each other, how we conduct one another, how we interact, that sort of thing. And then from that comes ritual, practices that support the ethics and the doctrine that come, okay? And so, and here's the idea that the mystical experience keeps religion alive and spiritual, okay? But you may ask, well, how does religion turn irreligious? Well, if we don't have continued mystical experience, what can happen is doctrine can harden and ossify into dogmatism. This is how things are. This is how things always are. And they're not changing. Okay? Ethics can harden and ossify into legalism. Legalism. Legalism which says, hey, in order for you to fit in to this tribe, in order for you to belong to this tribe, you've got to do this, 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 and this, and you better not do that, 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 and that. There's a legalism that's there. I spent 28 years as a pastor in the evangelical church. When I started out, I was a part of a community that we didn't dance. We didn't listen to secular music. Women had to wear dresses below the knee, very minimal makeup. Men had to, do their thing, and it was extremely, extremely legalistic. Why? Because the ethics had hardened and ossified into that, okay? And then ritual can ossify into ritualism, All right? What's the difference between ritual and ritualism? Ritualism is the belief that only this ritual can be a part of this, okay? And I just invite you to think of your spiritual experience, because many of you here, I know you're looking at this, and if you've had Christian background, you can go, oh, yeah. Yeah, the Catholic Church was a part of this, or my Methodist Church, or my Presbyterian Church, or Lutheran Church, or all that kind of stuff. But a lot of you here, maybe you didn't grow up with church or religion. But maybe you had something else. Maybe there was a community that centered itself around something and or someone or some group of people. Maybe you're currently a part of a group, you know, that is very spiritual, and you have your own little internal doctrine, you know, and ethics and rituals that you do, okay? The invitation here is to question, how tightly are you holding on to that? One of the things I learned and I love about Coeur d'Alene is it is very religious about its music. I mean, there's a religious fervor that people have here about their music. You know, and when I ask people about it, what is it? It's all about nostalgia, the good old days. And I can relate to that. You know, I mean, I'm a music major. I studied all kinds of music in college. But, you know, growing up, 60s, 70s, 80s pop, you know, that's my jam. And I know that stuff. You know, and so to be taken back to that feels really good in new and fresh ways. But here's the key. I hope you get this. As you value that, as you treasure that, can you open to experiences that bring that goodness to life? This is why churches sometimes move at glacial speed with our culture. Because for many people, and this is true for me at least, I won't speak for you, you know, my church is my one place where it's like, I can find safety and sanity in this world. But when someone or something, dare I say, invades that, and starts to upset the apple cart, oh my gosh, things happen. And some of the most horrific crimes in the human experience have been based on religion, religious belief, dogma, and the fear around that's changing. So here's the idea, is that both are needed, okay? How does this, I'll just put this up here. Left to itself, without the mystical experience, religion turns irreligious and irrelevant. Now, again, if we look at religious communities, spiritual communities, I don't know any of us that wake up in the morning and think, gee, how can I become hardened and ossified and a legalist and a dogmatist and a ritualist? I don't know anybody that wakes up in the morning and thinks, how can I become that? So how does it happen? This is just a way to think about it. It's the difference between the mind and the heart. You know what the main function of these brains are of ours? It's to keep us alive. If you think about it, fascinating instrument this mind it is. We're not the fastest creatures on this earth. We're not the strongest creatures on this earth. But our ability to collaborate, our ability to think, our ability to self-reflect, and all of that have allowed us to arrive at a place where we are the premier animal species on this planet. So the mind is powerful, okay? But because the mind wants to keep us alive, it's going to gravitate toward what is logical, what is reasonable, and this is the most important, what is known. So that's why there's a natural gravitation back to, oh, give me the good old days. Take me back, all right? The heart, the soul, the language of the heart and the soul is love and mystery. And oftentimes, these two can be seen at war with each other. And many spiritualities and faith, not just Christianity, but others, set these two realities up as war. One is good and one is bad. The invitation here, and it's based in the teachings of Jesus and others, though, is to see the good in both. Can you, what it means to be healthy, what it means to be awake, is to notice when is my mind at work and when is my heart at work? And can I hold them both inside of myself with love and compassion and curiosity? Oh, there you go, mind again, you know, wanting to go back to the way things were. I was there last week as my dad was passing, or as we were reflecting on my dad, you know, and just remembering the stories of my dad, you know, where the relationship wasn't always easy, but man, there were beautiful times too. Taking me camping, involving me in sports, and telling me to follow my heart and don't do what he did and be an engineer at Boeing, because he, you know, this is a whole story about that, all right? No offense to Boeing engineers in the crowd, but, you know, his heart wasn't there. I started off in college on an engineering track and shifted gears and became a musician and a pastor, the minister. But anyway, where was I on that? So to notice, yes, when the mind works, and then but then to also notice those times where the heart works. And so many things, you know, are coming into our life that can disrupt and orient that. But yet, that's what the heart wants. The heart longs for mystery. Why do we love a good book, a good movie, a good glass of wine, a good dinner, a good, you know, walk in nature? This, I mean, you just can't help but just see the fingerprints of the divine over this beautiful land in which we live. There's a wonder. There's an awe. There's a mystery that the heart connects to. So the invitation, again, is not to pathologize or to pit the two against each other as, you know, at war with each other, but to welcome the polarity. Both are needed. And when both of those happen, oh my gosh, it gives rise and birth to something that's new and something that's fresh and something that's relevant today. So let me just, in the few minutes that we have left, offer you three principles that'll help you find love in religion. And the first one is this: welcome the disruption of the mystical experience. Sometimes mystical experiences are joyful and blissful and happy. You know, you listen to something good or whatever, and it's like, you know, being up at Priest Lake last week, I was given the, we also took a walk through the forest, and I was given the gift of peace and love and patience and grounding. I just really felt the grounding energy of the water and the trees and everything. But sometimes mystical experiences can be disruptive, and new ways of thinking, new ways of looking at each other, you know, can disrupt the way things are. Things like critical race theory. Looking at how we relate and how we've related as people to each other can be very disruptive to maybe how we've been raised. Discussions around gender and sexuality and sexual identity and sexual orientation can be very disruptive to how we were raised. And my hope and my prayer is that I can welcome those conversations with curiosity and kindness and wonder, coming from a belief, get to this in just a moment, that love is an intelligence that's just wanting to express itself, and that there's a goodness in here. But even in this thing that I don't not yet all know, there's goodness, and that there's faith that's there. Last night, Lisa and I had a chance to attend the Kootenai County Task Force on Human Relations. Did I get that right? Kootenai? Thank you. And I was just sitting there listening to this story. It was a story of a trial that happened here in like 1988. Was it Beeson's and the Aryan Nation? Yeah. And I was just in awe, and just absolutely in awe of the strength and the resilience and the wisdom of people who were involved in that conflict, and to stand for and to see that justice was served. And it taught me many things. The one is that there's a lot that I still have to learn about this community and the history of this community and what it's been through and what it's currently going through. But the point is, that's a mystical experience too. It's disruptive in how we live and how we interact with one another. Can you welcome that? As a human species, we've lived through an agricultural revolution, an industrial revolution, a technological revolution, an information revolution, and now I'm calling this current one, and maybe we've left it already, an idea revolution. AI, all that kind of stuff, it's here to stay. It isn't going anywhere. But I would just like to offer you this: ideas cannot be killed. When we're faced with an idea that we don't like, the temptation is to maybe try to shoot the messenger. Yeah. Okay? They tried to do that with Jesus. It didn't work. Okay? As we think about what's going on today, people who are offering messages of hate and disunity and dissociation, okay, let's remind you that we can't kill those ideas. And so we engage those ideas. I talked about this last week with I love Aikido. Aikido is a martial art that doesn't meet force with force, but it meets force with blending and redirecting. And it reminds me of what Jesus said, as you live in this world, to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. That's what stands out from the crowd. That's the type of religious and mystical experience that it can produce. Okay? Secondly, let faith be your anchor and compass. Faith be your anchor and compass. When you find yourself living in the fog of, I don't know what this is going on, where this is going, faith is a choice. I think it's a choice that all of us have inside. Last week after church, I was at the grocery store getting some stuff, and just caught fragments of a conversation that the couple in front of me was having with the cashier. They had been to church as well, and I didn't get the name or one another name or whatever. All I heard was, yeah, there really are some crazy people in this world, aren't there? You know? and I almost said that I was just too tired and out of it, you know. I wanted to say, isn't this world filled with beautiful, amazing people? Yeah, sometimes they do things to me that seem crazy, of course. But this world is full of beautiful people. Why? Because I believe, and we believe here, and I know you do too, that in everyone and in everything, there's a divine that is wanting to be expressed. When we forget that, we act and behave in ways that breed that disconnection or that illusion of disconnection. So again, the religious spiritual experience is all about dismantling those illusions and bringing us back to the reality and the truth of the fact that we are all connected. But that, my friends, I would just offer you is what faith is all about. Faith, that belief and that conviction, the assurance of things hoped for, and the conviction of things not yet seen. Let faith be your anchor and your compass. There was a song that I heard this morning as I was meditating. Might be a useful affirmation for you as you think about inside. And it asks this: what if I am not breaking? What if I am not broken? What if instead I am unfolding? All of us are unfolding. That neighbor with the political sign that just gets your goat is unfolding. That family member who you just can't see eye to eye with, you're both unfolding. That person who goes to the church, it's like, I don't know how you go there. Hey, we're all unfolding. All right, last one. Watch and listen for love in spirituality and religion. Watch and listen for love in spirituality and religion. Oftentimes, the mystical experience, when it comes, and this ties back to our meditation, it can awaken a longing. Underneath the anger, underneath the frustration, underneath the fear, there's usually, not always, can be a grief, and under that grief is some kind of longing. And that longing, if you can listen to it and know it and honor it, again, hard to put into words, but what we long for longs for us. What we desire desires us. As much as you long for God, get this, God longs for you. Crazy. David Brooks wrote an op-ed at the beginning of this year talking about heaven as a place of longing. Never heard of that before, and I'm still not sure what I think about that, but I thought that was useful. But I would just like to offer you this, something Lisa and I read a couple days ago from the Book of Awakening by Mark Nepo. This was the writing for September 26th, and I'll just offer you this as we come to a close here. The time has come to put our stones down, for hands clutching stones can't freely drum, and hearts fisting the past can't freely sing. It only took me a lifetime to learn, but the lesson is as profound as it is simple. As long as we clutch to one thing, be it a stone or rail or weapon, our hands cannot open or reach for anything else. The timeless and essential drama of living into the unknown resides in this simple sequence. We must risk putting down the stone or stick or gun we are grasping in order to build or touch or make music of any kind. It reminds me of a friend who wouldn't let go of his past. He clutched it like a rope and was afraid that if he let go, he would fall. But as long as he fisted his history in this way, he couldn't embrace the love that was before him, and so he never healed. It's unavoidably true. Hands must be emptied before they can be filled anew. It is the same with our hearts. It is why courage, day by day, is necessary. Amen. And so it is.
Thank you for that inspiring message. I loved it.
I've never seen the wings of an angel floating above in a clear blue sky. I've never seen the kingdom of heaven open its gates before my eyes. I've never seen you stand before me, but I know in my heart that you are here. What's invisible to the human? I have always known in this heart of mine, I can feel your love. I can trust in your faithfulness. I don't need any more than this. I can feel your love. I can feel your love. You are the one who gives me everything. You are the life within my breath. You are the sun, the one bright morning star, offering life, transforming death. Though I've never seen the glory of your face, and others may doubt you're even here. What's invisible to the human eye, you have always shown in this heart of mine. I can I can feel your love. can feel.